Hello and welcome to the podcast, He to Deliver Me from Bondage. I am Colleen Harrison.
And I'm Lisa Brunel. Colleen is the author of He to Deliver Me from Bondage, a personal study guide that combines in beautiful harmony the true principles of the 12 steps of addiction recovery with the truths found in the Book of Mormon and the restored gospel of Jesus Christ.
He to Deliver Me from Bondage was first published in 1991. Today, 32 years later, we are delighted to co-host this podcast where we will discuss life-changing truths and share the experience, strength, and hope we have both been gifted by Jesus Christ. It is our testimony that through the power of Christ's atonement, each and all of us can find deliverance.
Welcome to this episode of the He to Deliver Me from Bondage podcast. We're excited today to be able to have an interview for our Step 5 chapter. And we're grateful to be here today with Mike Colby. Mike is a friend of mine that I've known for about 3 years, and he is amazing. I heard him speak a couple years ago at a retreat, and I've heard him speak since then also. When he spoke a couple years ago, he shared some experiences that he has had as a sponsor, and he talked about sponsoring. And he'll tell you a little bit more about this, but he has sponsored so many people. And so when he spoke, he was speaking with this wealth of experience, being able to have gone through the steps with so many other people and helped them. And I was so impressed at the time, just thinking, wow, what a powerful person, Mike, that you have been in the lives of so many other people. And isn't it just so beautiful to see God using his children to work miracles and to do his work on the earth? And that's how I feel about you. When I think about you, I just think that's somebody God uses to do his work. And it's pretty amazing. So I always get emotional in these introductions. That's just how it goes for me. We're so glad to have you here, Mike.
I'm glad to meet you for the first time, Mike. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
We would just like you to start off, tell us a little bit about your story, tell us about your recovery. You can talk about step five, you can talk about sponsoring, and we will just see where the Spirit takes us today and pray that all of our listeners can be able to get the message that Heavenly Father has for them specifically today out of this interview. So go ahead and take it away, Mike.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and it's honestly a pleasure to be able to be on this podcast with you. And Colleen, I shared with you before we started this meeting too, I know that your book has been a foundational piece and bringing that 12 steps to the church and recognizing so much for bishops, for leaders, for individuals like me to be able to find the 12 steps and to be able to help them through. My personal recovery journey is related to lust, pornography, masturbation, sexual sin. And for me, started at a young age. I was reflecting on it just before this podcast. For me, I remember just being younger than a teenager and finding these things and remembering anybody that has suffered with addiction remembers when they realize that they're hopelessly defeated. And even before as a teenager, I still remember having the feeling when it came to lust and all the things associated with this of being helplessly defeated. Just feeling so entrapped by it at such a young age. So it became a revolving door. I remember meeting with bishops and them saying, hey, this is what to do, Mike. This is what, and they'll be good. And I remember trying it out, praying harder, reading harder, doing everything, and just having the same struggles again and again. Came to a point in my life when I went into high school, sophomore year, junior year, where I said, I'm done trying. How bad can it really get? And as I learned, as the AA Big Book explains, which is what my sponsor took me through, that addiction is a progressive illness. And that took me to some dark places. I remember about to graduate from high school. And I remember thinking, what am I doing with my life? Where am I going? And thankfully, in recovery, this says in the church's ARP manual that for some, recovery is really fast. And for some, it's a gradual process. And man, at that time in my life, God knew I needed just a miracle to happen. I had just such a great miracle happen where he just uprooted and completely gave me a different disposition. It was with a lot of faith from others. And I remember I was able to make some significant changes, broke up with the girl that I was dating at that time and did not view anymore, did not use. But I remember it took a year to be able to go on a mission. I remember in the back of my mind, there was this ticking time bomb where I just kept on feeling like, man, I feel like I'm good right now, but I feel like something can, this is explosive, can happen in the future. Forwarding later on in my story is, just came back from my mission and pornography, lust, all of that just was more rampant and just started back into that. And so thankful I met with the bishop one time. He said, you know, Mike, this sounds like it's not just a bad habit. It sounds like this is an addiction. I need to go to these 12-step meetings. And I took it and I got the manual, the church's manual. I read through it. I filled it out. And I'm like, why is this not working? And I remember going to some meetings and I thought, and all the pride that I had, I thought as I walked into the meetings, I'm like, man, I'm such a winner. These are a bunch of losers here. What am I doing in 12-step meetings? A lot of pride, a lot of pride. And finally, I got to this humbled place where I had another significant relapse. And a bishop that was really hard and direct with me, he said, why would you do this? It was the first time a bishop ever just was really kind of frank and upfront. He said, Mike, why would you do this? You have so many things going for you right now. You're about to start physical therapy school. You're doing this. You have this going on. And it was the first time in my life, I think I really understood step one. And I told my bishop, I have no idea. Absolutely no idea. I could always justify different things in my life before. But finally, I came to recognize I'm powerless over this addiction and my life has become unmanageable. I was grateful there in Mesa, Arizona, where I went to physical therapy school, that I went to a meeting and I was the three key ingredients. I was honest, I was willing, and I was humble at that time. And I met my sponsor and he talked about sponsorship. I had no idea what that was at the time, but he explained that it was somebody that had gone through the steps, had recovery, and could help somebody to take them through it. And I talked with him after the meeting and I said, hey, I've read through all these steps. I'm pretty much on step 7 because that's what I have filled out in my booklet. And he's like, all right, we're on step 1. And I thought he didn't hear me that well. So again, I told him, yeah, step 7. He's like, no, you're on step 1. And he was very, very straightforward with me. And he took me through the AA book. For me, I've never had any drink of alcohol or anything, but addiction is addiction. And whether it's overeating, pornography, whether it's lust, overspending, whatever the case may be, man, it's something that we need God's help and no other way about it. So met with him and thank goodness for that.
Was he a young guy like you or was he an older guy?
He was the older guy. I remember Mark, and for confidentiality, I'll just share first name, but Mark, I still remember he was single guy, had been divorced before and 50, I want to say he was almost 60 years old. And I remember thinking like, oh, was this going to connect? And it did not matter. What mattered is that he had the solution that God had worked in his life and a miracle that was so powerful. And I remember saying, I want what he has and I'm willing to do whatever it takes. So when he told me and he handed me the AA big book, I had that feeling of like, hey, I've never had alcohol. How's this to relate? And took it wholeheartedly.
You know, I've often thought that the Alcoholics Anonymous big book needs to be a fifth standard work, at least for us addicts. You know, it's got to be right there. I know I have like my third copy. I wore out a couple already over the years, but I've got one right here on my desk and I pretty much look at it almost every day for one reason or another. So I'm really thrilled to hear you know that you've had a lot of background in the big book.
It's something that I've read through a number of times because when he took me through it, he said, hey, there's going to be some old English language in here, but you're going to feel these principles come true to you. And there's just some simplicity of what it's written where I know is inspired by God. So for me, he took me through those steps and I'm so grateful for it because I remember before I know you've been going through in your book, Colleen, on the fifth step recently on this podcast. I remember when it came time for a fourth step, when I just was doing it by myself, not with a sponsor, I didn't really understand what a fourth step was. And I remember just being like, okay, I'm just listing a lot of terrible things. I feel like I probably shared these before, but I'm just listing a lot of terrible things that led me, honestly, at that time to more relapse because I wasn't digging deep and understanding. And then when it came time to be able to share, I was like, I guess I'll share some with my bishop, you know? But when I went through the steps with the sponsor, with somebody I had gone through it before, he helped me to understand the true nature of my wrongs, which was, it's not just these things that are happening. What are some of these deeper roots? And able to work through that in such a way. And when I was able to share with them, it was a really powerful experience because I wasn't just sharing just terrible things. I was sharing more about some of the roots of my addiction, some of the selfishness, the dishonesty, some of these things I had not seen before. And there's such a power meeting with somebody who is in that recovery space too, that's went through these steps. I remember Mark shared with me, he's like, there's nothing you're going to share with me that I probably haven't done or haven't thought of or something of that nature. So you don't need to be really concerned about that at all. And that was something I was very grateful for.
I just think it's really interesting. We've talked about the secrecy that Satan tries to keep us in. You know, that he just really tries to convince us that we have to keep these things from each other. It's so great to learn that it's so healing to let go and know that other people have come through this and out the other end.
Yeah, in the AA Big Book, there was something I even had it handy because there was something that really stood out to me in there. It says about how we live a double life, very much the actor to the outer world. We present that stage character. This is the one I like others to see, enjoy a certain reputation, but in my heart of hearts, no, I don't deserve it. And there's just this duality that happens, I feel like, before step five of feeling like, oh, if people knew this deeper part of me, they wouldn't say you're a great person. They wouldn't say this about me. They want to say that. And the adversary tries to say, you better hide that. But the amazing thing is when I shared with my sponsor, when I shared with the bishop, and then when I went to meetings and was able to be vulnerable, there's so much more beauty and seeing people with flaws and all that are striving to be able to be better versus before fighting within myself, having so much tension built up, and again, just lean to more relapse and relapse. So for me, it was an amazing thing with that. Just kind of going forward with a little bit of my story there too, I went into action and what into action for me looks like, and this is continuing with the steps. My sponsor helped me to understand about making that inventory, sharing with my sponsor, and then making amends. And one of the big things as I worked through the steps and found lasting sobriety, as you said, you have to share this message with others. You have to be willing to sponsor others. At the time I was in grad school, and I remember sharing with him early on the steps, I said, hey, I'm spending a lot of time and effort for this profession that I'm going into. I'm like, can't. You know, I just need you to know I got to have a balance with this. Can't put too much time into this. I remember Mark looking at me and said, I promise you everything that's dear to you, whether it be with your profession or future family, is going to fall apart if you don't put God first. So I wholeheartedly abandoned myself to that. And I took on a number of sponsees that time. And over the years, that was 2008. Over the years, I think it's been close to somewhere between 50 to 75. I don't keep count, but I know that there's been a vast number. And I'll tell you, one of the things for me is one of the greatest joys is something that can be so terrible turned to one of the greatest assets and one of the greatest things that you can share with others to be able to help avoid the peril and the dangers and get them in a place where God can work a miracle in them. I recognize again and again that Christ has the atoning power, that God provides that miracle. And what a cool thing just to be that little tool along the way. So for me, that's been a major part in that my recovery is recognizing just how important it is to be able to pass on this message, to be able to share it with others and helping me to be able to live that.
The thought comes to me as I'm listening to you, Mike, it must be like being the ultimate missionary, carrying the most. I mean, all of our missionaries carry the message of Christ, of course, but when we carry it in such a vulnerable spirit and willing to open our lives to the people we're trying to connect with and influence, it's a powerful thing to do, isn't it? I can hear it in your testimony.
It is. Yeah, it's a powerful thing, and it just strengthens your testimony. Well, I'll just speak for myself. Yeah, it strengthened me so much in a way that I desperately needed it. For me, I almost felt like in the parable where Christ heals the lepers, and he said, I thought that there was this many were the other, and the other came back and was willing to praise and thank Christ. And for me, before, I just wanted to be healed and just peace, I'm out of here. I remember going 12 weeks, I'm in and I'm out, and I'm not hanging around these parts. Like, why would I, you know? And then I recognized, man, the real beauty is in recognizing the miracle that he performs and then continuing to be a part of it. One, because I need that. I desperately need the Lord every single day in my life. And two, what an amazing thing to be able to share that and be there with others saying thank you for another day, you know, to be able to heal me. Just to give reference, my sponsor shared with me, and I read in the AA book that it says, I wouldn't trade the best days and addiction for the worst days and sobriety. I can honestly relate to that, because just having more of that peace of mind, having just more of that change of heart, is just such a miracle and a blessing in my life.
What you're sharing just makes me think, every time I hear President Nelson talk about gathering Israel, because my mind is so addiction recovery focused and so much in these things, I can't help but think this is gathering Israel. And whether the people that we help and sponsor are members of the church or whether they're not, I mean, we are bringing them to Christ and we're sharing this message with them. And just, I hear that in both of your comments as you talk about it, this is part of gathering Israel. This is God's work. And it really is powerful to be a part of it.
Wasn't it great how President Nelson taught us what Israel means, you know, to let God prevail? Isn't that what we're talking about, Mike? That you let God prevail in your life. That's what we've all got in common sitting here.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Is recognizing in just a deeper, more profound way. Because I always thought of the 12 steps, and was reading through your book, Colleen, and reading also through the AA book. I always thought before, like, hey, it's just uproot this addiction. But really, it's about a different way of life. It's about connecting with the Savior in a way of living that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And for me, it's just this way of living, of being humble, willing, and honest to be able to let God prevail in all aspects of my life. I was going to share, I know that with this podcast, this one particular being on step 5 too, just the power that came to me with this. I remember my sponsor shared with me, use one of the promised blessings that would come from having an effective step 5, meaning just sharing that. And it says that one of the blessings, I was just going to read this, because it says that once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling of the drink problem or addiction, whatever that may be, problem has disappeared and will often come strongly. We feel that we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the God of the universe. And for me, at step 5, again, was just this liberating thing where I can just feel more at peace, being more vulnerable, being more real in such a way that I'm not feeling that there's any hiding. There's any trying to just escape from it too. And for me, that's been a huge blessing, is feeling those promises realized in my life. So yeah, something I've been very grateful for, and something that's been awesome as a sponsor to be able to see with sponsees taking that step, and to be able to see how much their heart changes and how much more peace and confidence comes in. Because it's not that false confidence, but it's the confidence from God. I've been very grateful for that step as well.
Tell us a little bit about what that's like to hear a step 5 from somebody.
Yeah. So, and the reason I kind of almost laugh with when I say, yeah, like that is because there's varying levels. And I tell sponsees all the time when they're doing their step four, I said, there's no magic quota of how many things you're going to dig deep into. Because some, I still remember in Mesa, Arizona, sitting in the bedroom with this guy across from me, and we were there for 6 hours. Maybe it was seven. I don't know. It was a long, long talk. And that was part one. And we came back for part two. And I've also been with others that has been a briefer one too. And I just recognize that everyone processes in their own way. I always say, as long as we're not trying to be perfectionists and turning it to God, and in our step four, being able to write these things in whatever way the Lord wants to work that. So for me on the other side, sometimes it's been shorter, longer, but in each time, the main thing that I have felt is just a lot of sincerity, a lot of love for those individuals that are bearing their soul. And a lot of times they just feel so humbled of like, just so you know, before I share, I feel bad to share. And I just let them know, please don't, like, don't at all. And it's been just a really amazing experience, honestly, just like this strong spirit that just enters as this poison that they've been holding on to sometimes just starts to come out just more and more. I will say, though, with step five, it's again, has to be a sponsor helping with that step four. Because before, the only way to have an effective step five is writing these things out. In the past, I've gone to a bishop's office a number of times. And when I read through the ARP manual, the church manual, I thought, well, I've done step five. I've gone to bishop's offices and I've shared with them. But step four is different. Step four is really getting to the root of it. Who was the individual? Was this a resentment? Was this a fear? Was this a sexual harm, other harm? Who was the individual? What was the event? What feelings and emotions were associated with this? How did I get the ball rolling with this? What parts of self does this affect? And finding these deeper roots and helping sponsees. So that way, when they are sharing step five, it's not just a list of bad things. It's a list of understanding these things that we can turn over to God in a lot more effective way. I've kind of visualized it in the past when I would have relapse in the past. If you picture a fuse going off with dynamite, I pictured, like, as soon as the thought would come into my mind to use, it would be within seconds that I would just like, I'm done. I feel like ever since taking step four, step five thoroughly, God's given me understanding of these roots, these things that lead me to want to use or numb out. And it's as if that fuse is a long, long fuse now. I can feel if I start flaming the lust or anything like that, and I can start to see that going towards relapse. And thankfully, with step four and step five, there's more of that opportunity to be able to say, no, I'm turning this over to God instead of immediate. Sorry, Lisa, you asked a question. I just started going right after it.
I love it. Keep going.
Yeah, with step five, I've just felt in those rooms again, meeting with different sponsees, just a strong spirit. So the big thing, honestly, I prayed about it before last night, today, before coming on this podcast, or what's something I can share with other people that are struggling or other people that are in long-term recovery and need to stay that way. And the biggest thing that came to mind again is staying linked with a sponsor, somebody that you're continuing to grow with, and never, never graduate. I remember having that feeling of like 12 weeks I'm out, and I definitely never graduated when I was in that mentality. But I do remember I had probably about 6 or 7 years of sobriety, of long-term sobriety with no relapses, maybe some slips here and there with lust, but nothing significant. And I remember there was just different stresses, and I was like, I'm a young father, I'm busy, I'm not going to meetings. That was a phase in my life, but I just don't need to do that. I'm too busy with that now. And just started to drift, and little by little, you know, that addiction, because I kind of graduated myself, worked its way back again. And I remember having a relapse after long-term recovery and being like, man, this, it just hit me upside the head. And I've just been grateful to be able to dive back into these steps and just be able to feel, man, it's a lifelong for me. It's a lifelong recovery commitment. And before, I thought it was like, I don't want to say imprisonment, but it was almost like forced to, you know, like, oh my gosh, I have to do this for the rest of my life. And now I'm like, it's such a blessing to be able to get to live such a way to recognize I need that day in and day out, and I need that for lasting long-term recovery.
It makes me think of dialysis. You know, the idea that you just don't do it once and walk away. You have to go back and stay. And it's the same principle as we teach in the gospel. The idea that we have the sacrament every week, we do our inventory every week. We don't use those words, but that's really what we're supposed to be doing, is taking our own inventory and being ready for the sacrament every week. So it's not an unusual principle that we shouldn't, as Latter-day Saints, understand how it works.
Yeah, I appreciate that too, because when I talk with sponsees and when my sponsor took me through, he said, Mike, this is really the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is what this is. But more than likely, you've been doing it at a superficial level. You've been given probably some lip service to it. Because I remember feeling almost frustrated when I recognized, I remember going to a 12-step meeting for like first times. And I remember like wanting to skim through the manual. Okay, what's the secret? What's the special sauce that's going to do it? Because like I served a mission, but what's the real trick, right? And then recognizing it actually always has been the Savior throughout, and it's always been God and turning my life to Him. But the problem was before is I didn't have enough honesty, humility, and willingness to be able to turn and have His sacrifice work for me in my life, because I gave it a lot of lip service. I would speak it, but it wasn't really deeply rooted in my heart. And then when things came of revelation or the Spirit to guide me on something, I'm like, well, I don't know. And when I effectively took step one in my life, I admitted to myself and to God and to others that I am powerless over my addiction, that my life has become unmanageable. So if I don't link up with two and three on a daily basis, which is I believe God can and will restore my sanity, and three, turn my life to God, then it's just a matter of time when I'm left to myself that my life is going to fall apart. It's unmanageable. And my addiction will return again. So it's the gospel of Jesus Christ in action. And that was the thing, the real discovery for me the whole time is that's what it was, you know.
Do you ever feel a little bit of burnout? I mean, it sounds like you have been pretty intense for a long time. And I know you kind of addressed that a little bit by staying in and doing this, but I know like life still happens and you get these ebbs and flows in your excitement and your, even maybe your exposure to possible people that you can sponsor.
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question, because I definitely have had times of that, of burnout. And the times that it's burnout is when I've taken on probably a little bit too much. In the past, when I was doing PT school and that grad school at that time, I was single and I had just a little bit more flexibility in my schedule. I shouldn't say a little bit. I had a lot more flexibility than four boys right now and a wife with full-time jobs. So there was a lot more flexibility. So I could sponsor up to 9, 10 at that time. Now I've just come to recognize that most of the times it's going to be one or two. And what I mean by that is there's the intensive part of sponsoring at the beginning of those first steps, reading together, have them do different assignments together and working through that. And then there's the people that are in more of the maintenance steps where, yeah, we'll probably talk like once a month. We'll probably text back and forth, just a little check-in. Sometimes people do it with emails morning, night. And for me, I just recognize I have to just usually take on one or two sponsees. But the cool thing also for me is if I want it more than the person trying to recover wants it, it's never going to work. So I've recognized also that if the person's not putting in the work, I need to let them know that, okay, you're not working the steps at this time. The steps do work. When you're ready, I'm ready to help you, or somebody else will be, but you're not ready at this time too. I'd say that's when burnout comes, is when you're trying to chase the person, convince them into recovery instead of somebody that's really willing. I have a brother that I'm working, sponsoring with right now. And for me, it's the opposite of burnout, right? It's like, as we meet together, and as I see the Lord making changes in his life and just some amazing things with that relationship with family, it's just been really powerful. And for me, all aspects of my life, with my kids, to my relationship with my wife, to my work, I feel God blesses that and allows it to go so much more just smoother from making that small sacrifice, you know? So hopefully that answers your question, Lisa.
Yeah, that's great.
For me also, I would say for the person that is saying, probably don't need to work with the sponsor. I probably, you know, the steps, I have the book, I listen to podcasts, I go to a meeting. I would say just really reflect on where you're at also. Are you making those necessary changes? And more than likely, it's just hard to be able to be individually with ourselves without a sponsor and work. So that is definitely my thought with that as well, too.
So true. We can't do this alone.
For sure.
This is in the episode about my story, but when I first found the 12 steps, I didn't get a sponsor and I didn't go to meetings. I just tried to do everything by myself. And I did learn a lot of really amazing things, but it was such a more powerful experience when I finally found a sponsor and I began to work with a sponsor. And same, like I had nobody to read my step five to. And I just thought, well, you know, I'm not going to just read this to anyone. I don't even know anyone working recovery stuff right now. So it was almost like it says, tell it to God. I would tell it to God, but it's not the same as we talked about in a couple of our episodes before. If you can't be vulnerable and you can't share with another person, there's still this part of you that stays in that secrecy. And isn't sponsorship just a beautiful concept anyway?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing of working through something, God changing something in your life, and then being able to bless that on, pay it forward to other people. I was thinking more about how that isolation again with step five, just kind of going back to that a little bit. For me, it was just hard to be able to be honest and be able to be true with others when I felt like I was always hiding something. So for me, finally, when my sponsor helped me to recognize you can be honest and you can be true, you can be vulnerable, man, this opened a whole different dimension or level in my life that I never had before. You know, before I felt like a lot of relationships could be pretty superficial. And I feel like by working the steps, this more depth where I'm able to be able to meet people, even my profession, even as a father, we're losing temper and being able to be vulnerable and be able to do kind of almost a little bit of a step four or step five with kids and be able to say, man, I recognize I was tired from the day, right? My step four that I'm sharing with them, I was tired from the day. And yeah, there might have been some things that should have gone a little bit differently, but I was out of line. And I'm doing my step five and explaining some of these things and making amends. And this vulnerability that for me and my family and for my kids that the 12 steps that's taught has been something of recognizing that we're all in growing phase, right? We're all just learning. And for me, that's a really beautiful thing to be able to recognize that, because I'm never telling my kids like I've arrived. I let them know I'm still working on things and trying to become better father, better husband with Christ.
So Mike, I was wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about your relationship with the Savior as your life has changed through these experiences and this 12-step process you've gone through.
Yeah, I think the best way I can put that is I remember talking to a bishop. I was out there in Mesa, Arizona, and I remember with the bishop, he is a new bishop in a singles ward. And I was thankfully about a year and a half into sobriety at that point and talking with this bishop and sharing with him. It was the first time I ever had gone to a bishop without having struggle, but saying, I'm in a good place. And I want to share with you about the struggle that I had been through because the Lord had worked something in my life. And I remember meeting with the bishop and saying like, hey, I need to share with you. I feel impressed to be able to share about what these 12 steps have done and how it's brought me to this point in this relationship with Christ and how it can help others. I remember him sharing with me, thank you so much. There's such a big need for this and having a discussion. But I remember sharing with him about that relationship with the Savior. I said, before I had a relationship with the Savior, but the depth was so much greater at that point. And I remember sharing with him is I had a problem that had hopelessly deceived me. I've tried countless vain attempts again and again, so many different ways. The Hey Big Book talks about all these different ways that we try to manage it. I tried so many times and I shared with them, I have an absolute testimony that the atonement of Christ is real. It's in my life day in and day out because there's no way that I can be in this place where I'm at mentally, spiritually, physically now where it was before. My life, what it looked like before, is using multiple times a day. My life before was constantly just flooded with temptation after temptation of nonstop. If I had a day or two where I hadn't thought about that, that would be super rare. But it was completely out of control. And I felt trapped in that way of that would be a way of life. So when I think about the way it is now, where sure, temptations can come here and there, but nothing like that was before, I know for sure of certainty that Christ lives. I know for certainty that he has the power to absolutely change my heart and my life and other people's lives. So that's the depth I felt with that.
The words that come to my mind are, it's like walking on water. It's the equivalent of something that a person can't do. We all know we can't really walk on water without the Savior, without Christ. And it's a miracle to us as we live close to him and have his power. I can hear that in your story, and I appreciate your testimony of that, because he does for us what we can never do for ourselves, you know, without his grace and power, that's for sure.
Thank you so much for sharing that, because honestly, at the very first months, I remember living out there in Mesa, Arizona, feeling that literal. I had that imagery literally in my head of walking on water. I'm like, how in the world is this happening? I remember what this has happened so many times as a month would go to by, 2 months would go by, 3 months to sobriety, of feeling like a change and feeling like, when's the bottom going to drop out? And I almost felt like Peter right there just looking around like, oh my gosh, like, I know I'm going to sink any time now. What is going on? And just feeling that miracle happen. And I feel like I want other people going through the steps. This is also something where I've never had any time that there's not slips, or there's ever time that there's doesn't, because just like Peter walking on water, there is that time where he looks at the waves, and the waves in my life, what they look like can be fear. They can be financial things. They can be resentment. They can be so many number of things, right? And it's as if I see those waves mounting up and my focus goes off the Savior, but man, his arm is outstretched still, just like his scriptures. And every time that I still feel like, man, there's a little bit of that slip into lust of recognizing right away and turning to him and talking with a sponsor and if necessary, a bishop, and getting that straight to make sure staying on that straight and narrow. I think it's so important, because there's just that perfectionistic way that can start to feel like, oh my gosh, if I make one little mistake, that means that I guess this is all done with, right? Or anything of that nature, just not true.
I guess that's what the 10th step is for, isn't it? You know, that we can 10th step things and call somebody. I love that one page. I think it's 84 in the big book where it talks about the 10th step. The whole 10th step is about just
yes.
1 inch of text on one page.
Yeah. It's a really powerful thing. I just felt impressed too, to share just a little bit about in my story too, like first going to meetings, just because sometimes there might be people listening to this that haven't or kind of feel that fear of like, am I going to see somebody I know at the meeting? What if this happens or that? And for me, when I first started going to meetings, I was at BYU. I didn't tell a single one of my roommates. I didn't want anyone to know. I was like, no, my gosh, secrecy for sure, all the way around. I'm just going to study on campus, right? Still remember, I was actually teaching at the MTC as I was going through this, and talk about feeling lots of guilt, right? So I teach at the MTC, I'm trying to work through these things. And I remember the 12-step program back then was at a seminary building. And I remember being like, okay, the meeting's at 8:00, I'm going in. And I walk in to only find a fellow, this was a female MTC teacher there, and then kids there and stuff. And then she's like, oh, what are you doing here? And thank goodness must have been an institute teacher that understood that the recovery meetings were next. He's like, you must have been here to volunteer, right? He's like, you just came just a little too late. And I could see that look in his eyes of just like, don't worry, I got this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, next week I'll get this time. And I go out and wave my card to make sure. And then 8:30 rolls around when the meeting was and going in and such. And the reason I share that is because I think about step five again. It's just a lot of that feeling before of secrecy and of like, man, if somebody knew that I was really broken, or really had this. They look at me so different. And these days, if I see somebody I know, I'm like, thank goodness, this is going to be a lot deeper relationship. We'll be able to talk about these things. And it's a really cool place. I don't expect everyone to be there at first. You just feel like, I don't want anyone to see me, but I just feel impressed to just share, just to be able to get over that hump of like that fear and that secrecy and to be able to get to those meetings.
Most of your personal recovery story unfolded while you were single, right?
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about how things went along and now you're married and you have four boys, a little bit of that in between, because I'm sure your addiction affected your ability to relate with women and to date and all of those things.
Yeah, I still remember because my sponsor is pretty hardcore. And Mark told me, he said, as you're working through these steps, you shouldn't really be dating right now. And that's, every sponsor is going to be a little bit different. And again, they're not the end all. It's not personal revelation on all this and never says that. But I remember with him, he said, who you're probably going to seek when you're starting in this addiction, just right at this point, he's like, maybe if you work through these things a little bit more, it might work out a little bit better. And I remember having frustration sometime with that, but I remember just being like, all right, I'm going to try to work that too. So as a single individual, I remember working through that. And I remember having a lot of honesty when I had sobriety and working through with, if I was dating somebody long enough and I felt like he was progressing to more serious relationships, I would talk about where I'm at with the steps. I'd say, this is what I'm working on because I recognize. And I remember by some people, they were just like, nope. No part of that. Don't want to be around that at all. And I was like, that's all right. You know, that's okay. I act like I'm really cool about it. I was actually pissed about it. I should say I was really frustrated about it. Sometimes, you know, I'm like, what the heck? Why would you, you know, and I act cool about it now. But I remember sometimes being frustrated, other times being like, but in the end, it's all right. And I will say it was a blessing to be able to, when I met my wife, when we started dating, to be able to say, hey, I've had 3 years in recovery. But I was really point blank of saying, this is the lifetime thing. Like it's something where I turn my life to God in this. And I recognize I need this throughout our marriage too. I remember with my wife, her recognizing that and seeing the steps I was working. And it was really cool to be able to kind of start the relationship that way. I know that's unique for a lot of people. For a lot of people, it's in marriage that happens. And for me, it was cool to be able to come in that way. And as I've had relapses or slips in marriage, it's been good to be able to see it. I know where you're coming from with that. And I know where you can continue to go. And again, that's why it's important to never graduate, of course, and to recognize it's a lifelong. Well, I think one of the general authorities or the 70 or something said, until I'm safely dead, you know, always going to be the ways of the adversarial snares, right? So, but does that answer some of that, Lisa, about relationships? I know it can always be tricky for a lot of people.
Yeah, that does. I think a lot of people, especially as our world gets more intense, I would say, I think a lot of people will be in your position. And it's pretty amazing to start a relationship with complete and total honesty. I didn't have that in my relationship, but I know people that have, and it is a different story. And it's a different experience for your spouse. And I think that that can be really powerful and helpful. I don't know how anyone doesn't deal with some of these things to an extent in the world that we live in. And so to develop that vulnerability and that complete honesty right from the beginning of a relationship, I think is a gift.
Yeah, it was one of the things I was grateful. It's kind of like putting in that work and having the Lord work through miracles and recognizing some of that payoff. For me, coming with marriage is like, yeah, I was completely vulnerable and able to share and feel in a good placed. And I feel like for my wife and I, it's been a blessing. I've seen multiple people work through the steps in any circumstance, anywhere from single to divorce to same-sex attraction to you name it, all these different ways and how the Lord can still work miracles and find a way to be able to heal not only their hearts, but other people's hearts too. For me, it's like you said, Lisa, there's probably a number of people that are single and feel like, oh my gosh, like, I'm going to come into this and have to share about that. And it's okay.
I've had a lot of experience when my husband Phil was still alive. We did a lot of couples counseling with them. And it was really interesting how many times we saw this situation where they were thinking about getting married. How many young women think, oh, if I hear this from this young man, then I'm not going to continue having a relationship with him. And Phil and I were just so sad to hear some young women take that position, because the truth is, we wanted to say to a young woman, if your husband, if this young man is willing to talk to you about these things, you've got a toe in the door. You know, you're way ahead of somebody who is courting with a young man who's keeping all this a secret and hiding it from her and telling himself that he's going to get over this after he gets married. He won't need it anymore. You know, he won't need the pornography or whatever anymore. And, you know, my husband was a pioneer, you know, decades ahead of when this started for him, and was willing and able to say that didn't work. You know, that he got home from his mission, had stayed completely straight through his mission, and then got home and got married quickly to the young woman that was waiting for him, and thought that marriage would fix it. Marriage would be the Band-Aid. That's all he needed. And it turned out it wasn't. And then the crash was even worse for him.
Yeah, that honesty and that humility that people bring in, and that vulnerability, there's something about it that's just a really powerful thing. And then I recognized also the cool thing about working through the steps is you recognize everyone has their own baggage, whether it's not addiction. There's all these other ways, and all of us are working the gospel of Jesus Christ in our lives. So even if that person is not coming in that way into marriage, there's going to be other vulnerabilities, different things. And for me, it's like, I always thought this was the biggest curse of all time. I still remember at BYU, I remember driving into a parking lot. I can still envision exactly pulling in and just thinking as I was driving, like, this is what my life is. And I remember this tender mercy that came to me at that time and says, Mike, if you continue to work and strive to do these things, that time will come that you'll be able to work through this and you'll be able to get past that. And I feel impressed too, as I was prepping and thinking about this, of one of the coolest things in this recovery thing is the people that are all around us that we get to be able to help and be an instrument. And when I served my mission out in Baltimore, I got to meet an individual out there, and he is about the same age as I am. And at the time he was about 20 also, and I baptized him and was so grateful to be able to go to the temple with him later on and later year. And then all of a sudden he kind of fell off for a while. I'm like, where is this guy? What's going on? You know? And just to have him share with me later is like, Mike, you know, like I want to let you know, I struggle with pornography, and that's why I kind of wasn't around the church, because I felt just a lot of this shame and this and that. And I'm like, dude, God must have led us to each other, because that's the same thing that I work with. And it was such a cool thing. I got to be able to help with him and be his sponsor for a little bit, and have another person help with being sponsor. And we talk like on a weekly basis, and it's just amazing, just the miracles that happen and working the steps and how it can bridge for so many people. I just want to share in the AA Big Book. It says, we realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man or woman that is still sick. The answers will come if your house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows, kind of like step 5. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And I love those places, because I think about the people that have done that for me. I think about Mark back in Mesa. So grateful God worked a miracle in his life and I was able to meet him. And I think about how I've been able to, and just a small effect to be able to help that with others. And man, what a beautiful thing to be able to work through that wreckage of the past and to be able to work and be able to help others in that way. I feel like this is a lot about step 12 right here too, but all the steps tie together, right? So
absolutely. Yep.
Well, it's been really awesome to be with you today. Our time is coming to a close. It's really awesome how prepared you were for this interview and all these thoughts that have come to your mind and these quotes. I really feel it's going to be powerful for the people that listen. Is there any last words or last experiences you feel impressed to share?
Yeah, just thinking about that is that the Lord in my life, and I think about it too, of how he can work miracles and how he can turn just some of the worst experiences into gold. You know, I remember my sponsor sharing that with me. As Mike, some of these terrible things, God can turn into some of the great things to be able to help others. And it doesn't always feel that way. But for me, I think that's been one of the biggest blessings is to recognize even in the trials is that there's always something to be able to grow from, something to be able to help with. And then recognizing again, that relationship with the Lord that's able to blossom and grow so much deeper with these 12 steps. So I've been grateful for that. And I'm just grateful to be able to share some of these experiences with you and hear all of your insights at this time too.
Well, thank you, Mike, so much. It's been an honor to have you with us. You said some really wonderful, powerful things. Well, young men, I hope will hear this.
You're welcome. Likewise. Thank you so much.
We'll wrap that up for today and send up a prayer that our listeners might be able to feel of your spirit, Mike, and to feel the Holy Ghost testify of what we each specifically need from this message that you shared. And we're grateful to you, and we'll be with all of our listeners again soon. We'd like to thank you for joining us here at the Heated Deliver Me From Bondage podcast. We hope you have been blessed by the time we have shared today.
We rejoice with you in using the 12 steps of addiction recovery, and we testify that through the power of the atonement of Jesus Christ, we can be delivered. He is the answer, the solution, and the conclusion to every challenge or trial we may face.